Welcome to Diversity Connects Us. This podcast highlights lived experiences and inspirational stories of strength and tenacity. We will share profound and courageous dialogues that influence diversity, equity, and inclusion by breaking the barriers and labels of stereotypes, confronting biases, and offering best practices to achieve a more significant, cultural, and emotionally intelligent mindset. Welcome back. Thank you so much for your patience. We're talking today about neuroscience and emotional intelligence. And before technical difficulties, I had asked the question, what neuro has to do with the science? And if neuro means neurons for those who are trying to understand what neuroscience is, or is it neurotransmitters? And what does it have to do with science? And I believe I was asking Kayshawn that question, right?
Yes. When I hear the word neuro in science, I think about science. And science means the study of. And the neuro in neuroscience refers to our brain and nervous system. So the word neuroscience, from my neurocoaching perspective, is the study of the brain and nervous system. And why it helps us to understand that as individuals and people is because it gives us a deeper understanding of what's happening from moment to moment. As we are communicating with others, as we are having intrapersonal conversations and dialogue with ourselves. So when we can understand the neurology or the nervous system functions that are happening, am I experiencing a sense of distress? Am I experiencing a sense of calm and joy? What is happening in a physical way, in an emotional way? When we have that understanding, there are ways that those experiences are directly mapped to parts of our brain and nervous system. So what I do as a neuroscience-based coach and neuroleadership consultant is help people to have a very easy, practical understanding of that to help them navigate challenges and successes in the workplace in the most successful ways possible.
It's interesting. I think what triggers me is the physical aspect, right? So I think we had this conversation in a podcast last year when we talked about the physical sensations that we feel once we have a thought or a feeling or an experience that revs up a physical sensation in our body. Like, I remember the conversation clearly because I think I said, you know, before I start a podcast, I feel the anxiety. So, you know, my palms become sweaty, my heart starts to race, and I'm able now to put a word to the feeling. So it's anxiety or it's fear-based, right? And most of the time, it's, I think, part of that process is also emotional intelligence coming into play with the neuroscience. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes, you put that beautifully, because so often we're not self-aware. And when I think of emotional intelligence and having a high capacity for it, or being very emotionally intelligent, is having a high sense of self-awareness. What is happening in my body in this moment? What is happening in my mind right now? And what's the next best choice for me to make as I engage for myself and with others? Absolutely.
Right. Enan, you know, when you think, or when you've been in situations where you've had to use neuroscience as an organizational psychologist, how would you be able to explain it also in different terms for our listeners?
So I think in my work, it's been really important to speak in terms that are easily digestible for the client, right? So be it executive coaching or the work I do, generally speaking, around consulting and or facilitation of org assessments, it's, you know, speaking to the awareness of what's happening for us neurologically and how that's manifesting itself through our behavioral patterns, right? So it's sort of leaning into this idea of awareness, but awareness on two levels. So there's the internal awareness specific to a thought that we might be having that is in turn affecting a feeling that we're experiencing and then sort of playing out through our behavioral pattern. But then it's also pausing to ask what others might be experiencing as well, right? So emotional intelligence as a construct, it's having that conversation around the idea that this awareness is twofold, right? So again, it's sort of what's going on internally, but what's also going on in the environment as well, and the importance of understanding that interplay, right? So for leaders, for example, in, let's take executive coaching for an example, it is often revisiting situations that have occurred and gaining some insight into what the leader was experiencing at that point in time, before then ultimately processing what very well might have been going down for others in that situation as well. And then working with the data points that surface around that, the themes that surface from that.
It's interesting. I think also what comes to mind is, I think at the bottom, at the crux of it all, it's really the capacity to make the discernment, right? So it's a discernment between, do I react? I had a post yesterday, and the post really was, you know, someone who has low emotional intelligence, and it's not a criticism to them, but someone who is not aware or doesn't have the capacity to be self-aware is reactive, impulsive. It could be a whole slew of things that also can create a toxic environment without even them knowing. So I think also what's really important is that in all of that, like both of you said, it's really to be able to stop, pause. Is what Eden said, to pause. And I don't think we pause enough to be able to recalibrate and to understand what it is that we're processing and why.
Absolutely. That's it. So often, well, I would say culturally, I'll speak for myself, come from a very doing oriented culture where you do something and it's followed by the next action and then the next and then the next. We're always wondering and focused on the next. What's the next? And not really knowing how to pause or why it's important. Feeling like when I do pause, I feel a sense of discomfort. I feel like I should be doing something even when I am pausing. So what the understanding of how that affects my brain, the neuroscience of that, what's happening when I'm always doing, what could be the effect of that long term? For me, it was burnout. It was experiencing burnout where I got to a space where it wasn't healthy for me to do anything more. I had to rest for an elongated amount of time. And so many people are experiencing that now in the workplace, or they feel like they're on the verge of it, or they've experienced it before and don't want to experience it again. We have to have a more balanced view of ourselves as human beings, really focusing on the being part of that, where we can just be. So emotional intelligence to me is tied to our beingness. How are we being in a moment, in a conversation, in an environment? How are we being? Are we being in a state of distress, like I was saying? Are we being empathetic to ourselves and others? Do we feel connected? Does our beingness feel connected to our work, to the values of the organization? Really being able to pause, maybe for a moment, 20 minutes, a day, a weekend, however long that would take, to be able to be reflective and to orient ourselves within our bodies, to see and tap into what's happening. Our brains are the control center for everything that is happening in our bodies. So that's the lens that I speak through. That's the framework that I work from, helping people to understand what's happening in their bodies, what's happening with them at work, using neuroscience-based language to help them make those connections to make better choices when they do pause and reflect.
Well, I would add to that, that conceptually, the doing within and of itself doesn't allow for processing, right? So that pause that we're talking about is critical in that it provides a generative space, an opportunity to stop, pause, reflect, better understand what's surfacing for us, you know, where we're at in that given moment, and what might be the best pathway to moving forward. right? So that processing is critical to creating those spaces that ultimately allow us to, you know, tap into our strengths and surface those strengths in key moments. You know, the act of doing and getting caught in that cycle of doing. You know, so we've touched on burnout a little bit, but taking a step back and now leaning on my time as a therapist, that's where we see the higher levels of stress, the higher levels of anxiety. That's where it can become difficult to, you know, manage our emotions because we're not giving ourselves time and space to do so.
I love that. I think also what happens is I love storytelling and I like to put things into perspective for a lot of the listeners. And I think also what happens is exactly what both of you are saying. It's the doing because of we're allowing society to put those pressures on us and to be persuaded that doing is what's going to make us successful. But really, when you think about it, it's rendering us a disservice because our bodies are only temples.
Yes.
And if we're not taking care of our bodies and we're constantly doing, then it's going to have a physical reaction because of all of the doing. And there was a moment we were in the kitchen, my daughter and I were in the kitchen yesterday. And, you know, first time back to school after spring break. And I was already anticipating the doing, driving to Taekwondo twice a week, going to dance class on Thursday, Wednesday, you know, she has another commitment. And I asked her, I said, you know, I know it's the first day back. Would you like to go to Taekwondo? My mind is doing. So I'm already thinking, okay, it's 4:30. We have 2 hours for homework, right? Again, doing. Homework needs to be done. And then she's going to run upstairs, put her Taekwondo uniform on, and then we're going to drive 20 minutes. And my mind was already racing and I became exhausted just with those thoughts. And I felt very anxious. I had a tightness around my heart and I paused and I asked her, do you want to go to Taekwondo? And she said, yeah, mom, I really want to do it. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, we're going to go. So she runs upstairs and then she comes back down. And she's not dressed. And she said, Mom, you know, I really thought about it and I'm really tired.
Yes.
And I said, okay, my love. I said, so we won't go. She said, no, I just want to stay home. And then I realized her anxiety dissipated. My clenched heart no longer felt clenched. Yeah. And then it opened a whole, now we had all this time to be able to communicate about something that we would not have had the time to communicate. And that was our downtime.
Wow. I just love that story. I just think about the spaciousness that you created. The spaciousness then invites opportunity for connection when we have some space to process, as Dr. Rudell said, for ourselves and to process with others. Right? To ask those questions, to be in a state where we're actively listening and where we're hearing what the person is saying and then reflecting back what that means for us and then being able to co-create what our steps forward can be. That's the beauty of being able to pause, as I say in neuroscience speak, between stimulus and response. So pause, adding that space. And so this is the question too that I get with my coaching clients and training workshops that I do. People don't know how. They just don't know how to do it. We've been conditioned to always do and to go from one activity, one experience to the next without space for pause. So it sounds so simple, but in practice, people need support in learning how to do that for themselves. Organizations need support in understanding why it's useful for the organization itself, to the bottom line, and to their employee population. So that's part of the work that I'm so blessed to do now.
So when I think about the value of the pause, right, two examples came to mind for me. First, going back to, again, my time as a therapist, I'm recalling instances and sessions where the person would share something, you know, maybe something kind of heavy, and I would literally just pause, right? And it was during that time that I actually learned the value of not filling silence with the sound of our voice. And it would be in those moments that oftentimes that critical aha moment would happen for the person because they would have said something and given themselves time to actually process what they just said. And then there would be moments where that within and of itself would actually lead to a richer conversation. So two things, them sharing, me not jumping in, that space being created, and then ultimately some thoughts by way of, you know, coping strategies or a pathway to move forward would ultimately surface. The next that I'm having is an exercise that we just facilitated for a course that I'm co-teaching called Dialogic Intervention Theory and Practice. And the exercise is centered around the idea that you take two people and you have somebody sharing while the other is just listening. But then when the person that was sharing is done sharing, both parties are asked to pause for about a full minute to a minute and a half before anyone can speak again, right? And to the point that was just made, it's hard to pause because we're fighting that intrinsic desire to jump in, that knee-jerk reaction to say something. Please fill this space with something, because pausing is super uncomfortable sometimes.
Absolutely. I have a couple of thoughts about what you share. This is so, I love this dialogue that we're having. It's so rich. It's bringing up so many different experiences that I've had, lessons that I've learned. And one thing that I've learned as a neuro coach about the parts of our brain, the networks within our brain that need more time to come online. They need more time. The cellular structure of these parts of our brain, they're longer, they're thicker, and they're responsible for our ability to have vision, for our creativity, for us to have a limitless experience of ourselves. They just invite so much of that, once again, beingness into the space where we inhabit with others. And so it directly ties to networks within our brains and parts of our brains. When we do allow time to occur, they can come online and then do their thing. They're within all of us. They're there, but we need to actually be aware of them, become more aware of them, to then understand why it's useful to allow that discomfort of the pause to occur, because it is uncomfortable. One other thing I think about the discomfort of pause is that typically as a neuro coach, when discomfort is occurring, I see that as growth, because growth is uncomfortable. We've all heard about growing pains. It is physically painful. So the neuroplasticity, as our brains are changing and rewiring and reorienting to new information, new stimulus, growth is happening and we can feel a sense of physical discomfort. So sitting up in that silence, which can be uncomfortable, I like to think of it as growth occurring and also a space where, like you said, it's generative, it's creating something new, something healthy, something inviting, something that we can look forward to, that is aligned with our deepest goals and values.
I love that. I think it's actually happening with me now as I let the conversation flow and to allow the space, you know, for Enin, to allow the space for you, Kayshawn. I think what is true with the conversation we're having now is that I'm experiencing it. So I don't know if you see that I put it on mute and I take it off on mute. I put it on mute and I'm wanting to jump in. I'm wanting to jump in and I'm listening and I'm processing. You know, I have my finger right there on the mute to demute so I can jump in. And then I thought, no, it's okay. You know, it's a free-flowing conversation. And I think a lot of it also, because of the doing allows us to be in control, if we're going to take it a deep.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my God.
Right?
Yeah. That is like a concept I've been talking about with my clients, the idea of control versus power.
Yep.
So when are you operating from a space of trying to control? And when are you most authentically operating from your space of power?
Yes.
Where you literally feel empowered, and in doing that, in feeling that, you and then empower others, where it's a mutual exchange. And once again, I just love that word, just that generative space that's created, the generative opportunities for more, for just greatness that are lying right there within our reach, if we can allow ourselves to go there. It's just so powerful. It's so powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's pretty crucial, especially now that I think we've created a fast-paced life that is really affecting our nervous system.
Absolutely.
And our neurological patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why a lot of us, you know, or others are, you know, have emotional tendencies that we didn't have before, emotional eating or smoking or drinking or, you know, different ways to process our emotion, because we're trying to fill a gap that doesn't necessarily need to be filled with those external things, but it just needs to be filled with our alignment, our purpose, and our pause and silence.
Absolutely. I would say it needs to be felt, which we're so afraid of our feelings.
Right.
People are so afraid. We're unfamiliar with them. We're unfamiliar with the experiences of feelings within our bodies. Like you said, within these temples that we all have, when a feeling comes up, even if it's a good one, if it's unfamiliar, our brain will treat it as such. Like, this is not something you should do. This is not a place you should go. We're not familiar with the experience of abundance, of joy, of this type of excitement related to this type of experience. And it could be, I would say, an opportunity for us to grow in those moments. But we can be so desensitized, wanting to suppress, wanting to repress or shut down, just from a space of not having the capacity, the nervous system capacity to hold that space for new information, even if it's positive, for new feelings, even if they're healthy for us.
I agree. It's interesting because it's the discomfort, I think, that makes it a little bit more difficult to navigate. You know, what would be your takeaway today, Kayshawn?
Wow. Just thinking about space. I just think, once again, such a simple concept, but trying to make it practical. For me, this could be looking at my calendar for the week, which I like to do at the beginning of the week, and seeing where I have back-to-back meetings. Is there opportunity to start the meetings a little bit later, to add more space between one meeting and the next? It literally just happened today. I had this 12 o'clock experience with you all, and then a 1 o'clock. And thankfully, I checked my email and the person who I'm meeting with next asked for a 30-minute delay. And I said, yes, absolutely, because I know that gives me more space for pause. That gives me more space if I need to do a quick breathing exercise or meditation to calm my nervous system so that I can show up reset and refreshed for the next conversation, for the next responsibility that I'm going to. So that's the way it can look in a practical sense of adding space so that we can just be more present in whatever we're doing with whomever we're doing it with. That's my major takeaway.
I really appreciate that. I think for me, just in listening to you and reflecting on how I've been showing up across the board, you know, I wear a few hats. I think that there's been a little too much doing as of late. Right. And so it's no surprise that I'm feeling the way that I'm feeling, like tired, a little run down. So I think a takeaway for me is to practice what I preach and make sure that I'm getting those pauses in. I'm so caught up in the doing. And I think, of course, I'm well intentioned, right? Stuff needs to get done. But the question is, am I functioning optimally and in a way that is healthy? Right. And so I think for me, there's certainly some points of reflection I can take with me going forward off this call.
Absolutely. I love it. I would definitely agree with both of you. It's a process.
Yes.
And you're right. It's a process. I'm processing right now as we speak, and I'm already thinking how I'm going to slow my schedule down with Sophia so that I can have those connective moments. Or that, you know, those connections with her so that we can pause and have, you know, dialogue and just sit with whatever comes up between us at that time, since, you know, she's still growing and I feel like I could be in a position to help her pause and to understand what it is to create, to paint. You know, we're learning how to make jewelry, and these are all things I wouldn't have been able to do if we didn't pause those days that I decided not to do Taekwondo, or she decided not to go to Taekwondo or not to go to dance class, and then say that it's okay to pause but to have this balance. So I think innately, like, you know, both of you were saying, we're in a doing culture and we really need to, my takeaway is to really stop myself from myself.
Yes. That's where your power is. That's where I would say I find my power is starting with me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for both coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As we reach the top of the Diversity Connects Us Hour, I want to thank all of my listeners for tuning in. My name is Rochelle Carrier, and I'm a DEI personal consultant and EQ coach and authoress of 2 ebooks, Emotional Intelligence, a Toolkit for Managing Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and Know Yourself to Know Your Employees. The link to purchase the ebooks are in the show notes. Also, be on the lookout for my and Dr. Rudell's coaching workshops, presentations, and webinars. I also want to thank my producer, Titan32. That's his tag name on Fiverr.com. He does our beautiful edits. To trend with us, #DiversityConnectsUs.